This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Generation Fusion. I'm your host Andrew, joined with my co-host Mum.
Hi there everybody, Amanda here. Yes, back in the studio for another episode of Generation Fusion.
Yes, today we are talking about a movie I heard was really good, but was actually surprised about how good it was.
And a movie that you said we had to go to, and I was like, okay. And then was surprised by how good it was.
And that movie is The Martian.
No.
No, but it's a movie by the same people, written by the same writer, called Project Hail Mary.
Yes, so this was a sci-fi movie that I hadn't actually heard about. Oh, had I?
Probably.
I had, I think vaguely, but I wasn't terribly interested.
Do you know the first time I heard about it was a few weeks ago, and it was on an Instagram reel. And it was Ryan Reynolds on, like, a fake Jeopardy. And this was for tour. And he was like, and there was like, what's the term for a knee, a broken knee or something? He put IDK, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, he wins because another word, another phrase for it is internal derangement of the knee.
Oh.
And so I didn't realize until when I heard about the movie, I was like, Hail Mary.
Hail Mary. I hadn't heard about it, but I think you must have mentioned it or something. And I'm not very good at wanting to go to see movies. I don't know what it is about me, but it takes a little bit for me to want to go and see something. And I usually thoroughly enjoy the movies I go, but I'm just a little bit slow on the offtake. But you mentioned you wanted to go see this movie, and we had already been to see one earlier, which was Iron Lung, which was successful.
And I also just am a big fan of The Martian.
Yes, and I thought, oh, yeah, okay, well, we could go. And originally we were just going to be me and you together. But then your uncle mentioned that he thought it would be okay for Stephen.
Would have been okay for Stephen if it wasn't 2 hours.
It was a long movie. Actually, Stephen enjoyed it. He got quite enjoyed it. And he did acknowledge, though, that his attention span wasn't great. And I think the real advantage was having the food, even though I got the wrong one for him. But it was a good movie, and I'm going to give it credit where credit's due.
What one thing people said is it got them to go to the theatre, and people that haven't gone to the theatre since COVID and stuff. And a quote I heard from someone, I can't remember if it was Ryan Reynolds or someone else, but they said, it's not your job to come to the theatres. It's our job to make you want to come to the theatres.
Yeah, I guess that's that. I'm very much one of those people.
You see, I was like, oh, the movie came out like a month ago. It's probably not in cinemas anymore.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's fine. I'll just catch it on Netflix when it comes out.
Yeah, and
out
I,
on
was
Netflix.
Like, I was like, oh, I could just watch it on. And then I was like,
but it does seem like a good movie. And I checked and I was like, it's still in theatres.
Yes, and you wanted to go, and we were like, I said, not until after Nationals. And then after Nationals, I checked and I was like, yeah, it's still in the theatre. So,
and I'm glad we did.
Yes. Did I say to you, was I the one who said, let's go and watch it? Because I think I looked it up and mentioned to you, do you still want to go?
Yeah, I think so.
Something like that. And we also had a conversation about Ryan Gosling, who is actually a really good actor, but you never remember him. And I think that's why he's such a good actor, because he's not typecast. You don't go, oh, Ryan Gosling, yes, the actor who was. You just go, oh, yeah, Ryan Gosling, he's an actor, that's right. I can't remember him.
I think one of the funniest Ryan Gosling things is a few years ago when the Barbie movie came out, he was just a supporting character. He was playing Ken.
Yes.
And the movie's about Barbie. The movie's about women and kids and stuff. But he won the Oscar for Barbie.
Yes, I know. But he is the type of actor who this sounds weird. You don't remember. Yeah. You do remember, but you don't remember.
I've seen movies with him in it. I just can't remember any of them.
Yeah, and so
but I remember they were good movies. I haven't seen a bad Ryan Gosling movie.
No, and I think he's just one of those actors who just gets on and does the job, and a very good job. I think he did a very good job in the film, and as you said, I don't know any movies of his where he's not. The fact that he won an award for Barbie is credit in itself. I did read, because I do like to read.
I think before we get too far in, we are 5 minutes in, maybe you should talk about what the movie's about.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was just going to go into about that because I like to read about the movies before I go to them. I'm very much a person who, if I'm going to read a book, likes to read the last page first and then reads it happily. I know, it's a bit strange. And so I went and read the review of it, and I was not terribly sure how they were going to do the movie because it sounded a bit
lame,
yeah. So it's about this science teacher who wakes from an induced coma on a spaceship, and he wakes up with complete amnesia to start with.
Retrograde amnesia.
Yeah, but to start with, and I knew that they were going to have to cover it with flashbacks. They actually did a really good job, I believe, on their flashbacks.
I don't know how they do it in the book. I think the book was also flashbacks, but
yes, they didn't interfere and they didn't take away from the story. They didn't confuse. I thought it was actually really well how they did it. And he found out that he was the sole survivor on the spaceship of a three-person crew. He wasn't meant to be on it.
We don't learn that till the end of the movie.
No, we don't.
We know because they have – we learn early on because in a flashback we see the crew and there's a science person.
Yes.
But we – so we know he's not meant to be there, we just don't know why.
Exactly. He is a middle school science teacher and a
Formula One racer.
No, former molecular biologist.
Former molecular biologist.
Yeah. And so there's this thing called the Petrova line, which is seen
apparently, in the movie, you can see it with your naked eye.
Yeah, and it was
not in the movie, in the book. They don't talk about it.
A line from the sun to Venus, and basically what it was doing was that whatever it is, there's these things in it causing the sun to dim.
There's a Star Trek episode about it, I think.
Something like
back
that.
Back in the 80s.
and I don't know how they managed to recruit this guy.
Because he wrote a book calling scientists idiots for thinking that everything alive needs water to live.
That's right.
Then he was saying things can live closer to the sun.
Yes. So they got him, and he actually managed to crack a few codes and work a few
crack
things.
A few codes.
Crack a few codes.
You're making this seem like the fourth Die Hard movie here, Mum. It's not.
Yeah.
He conducted the scientific method.
He did.
He did experiments.
He did experiments, discovered a few things. But, you know, one of the things they didn't explore too deeply, but we just sort of took it, was the fact that they could use these astrophage as propulsion, which helped them give them
I read lights. The explanation somewhere. All of this stuff that there are holes in the movie exists in the book. Like this writer, Andy Weir, he goes all out.
Yeah.
He actually shows – if there's a calculation they talk about in the book, the calculation's on the page for you to read.
Basically these things are travelling across space and are taking all the stars out.
Taking the energy from the stars.
Taking the stars from energy. But they spotted one star that appeared to be fine.
Tau Ceti.
Yes. So they decided that they were going to send their scientists up to go and have a look. But there was this massive explosion, and guess what? The scientists got killed.
Yes.
So
both of them.
Both, yeah. And so, you know, only in stories would this happen. And they needed this guy to go on the space mission, but he didn't want to go.
Which I think is quite cool. Because in the movie, because it's quite clear, it's more clear in the book, but in the movie, it's like, he wants to be this big, brave guy, but he knows he's not.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite cool that they don't make him. Like in every other movie, the guy put his hand up. He's the one to go. He's the hero. Yeah, no. He's like, no. They had to drug him.
Kicking and screaming.
He tried to climb a fence.
He did.
They're not pretending like he's a hero.
No, they had to. They had to knock him out and put him into his coma and put him on the spaceship, send him off. The other thing too is there was only enough of the fuel. It was a one-way trip. Always going to be a one-way trip. So they call it a suicide mission. So he wakes up and he has to, I have no clue what the time span is.
I think it would have, the crew member's mummified.
Yeah.
So it's going to be longer than a year.
Yeah, I know, but I also got there were some things that
I wouldn't be surprised if it was 10, 15 years.
Yeah, but you see, that's what got me confused because it was, if he didn't go within 3 years, Earth was going to start struggling. 30 years was. Oh, I chose to put some of this stuff to the side because I couldn't quite balance it. But so he gets to Tau Ceti and he sees an alien spaceship.
I was thinking to myself, because this movie, I was saying to you, Mum, that it doesn't feel like sci-fi because it feels plausible.
Yeah.
If you know, plausible in the sense that it's believable.
Yes.
It's like, I was thinking to myself, imagine how he must feel seeing an alien, being the first human ever to see an alien.
I know. And I think they handled this whole alien thing really well.
One thing they
Because it could have just fallen to pieces.
And one thing Andy Weir said is, yeah, he's a big Star Trek fan, big Doctor Who fan, big Star Wars fan. He didn't want to do the humans with head ridges. He wanted them to be aliens.
And they did a really good job because they chose quite a foreign structure to what. It's not the sort of thing you could get.
It's a crab that people could find scary.
It was just a rock, a walking rock, really. But for you to be able to connect to it, they had to give it a language, which is what he discovered, how to communicate with it.
I was connecting with it before he got a voice.
Well, that's good.
When it was just the text.
Yes.
You know, I was like, this already feels like a character, even though the words he's saying is just text on a screen.
Yes. So they were there for the same mission. They were there to try and work out how to stop this.
And the big thing is, aliens. The alien isn't the bad guy.
No. And it wasn't making us fit into the alien's world. The alien fitted into our world. The alien had to wear the space suit or the small pressurized ball, which in the past it would have been the human having to fit into that, whereas it was this alien. And I couldn't quite work it out because he had obviously a far more advanced ship, but they got off the alien's advanced ship onto the Earth ship. And again, I give full credit because the Earth ship looks very similar to it's not like a big fancy spaceship.
It looks real.
It does look real. In fact, it doesn't look too unlike the latest spaceship that went in, Artemis.
Yeah.
Fun
fact: the reason that Rocky has to wear is because he breathes a different atmosphere. But also because his planet of 40 Eridani A, I think, AB, has the 29 atmospheres. His blood is made out of mercury, and his internal temperature, his blood temperature is like 318 degrees Celsius, which you can do because the higher the pressure, the higher the boiling point.
Yes, yes.
Which is why he has to wear that, is to, you know, because he maintains 29 atmospheres of pressure and 318 degrees Celsius blood of mercury.
And I didn't realise this in the film, but I'm just reading this little bit here, and it makes sense that Rocky, who was the alien, is a mechanical engineer. So he needs Grace, who's a biological engineer. The alien's not the expert. And neither's the human, but they need both to solve the problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, they did a really good job, I thought.
I also thought it was cool Like, they don't go too deep into it. But how Rocky doesn't see, he uses echolocation.
Yes.
A really advanced form of echolocation.
Yeah, and that
which
was...
Which is also cool because they had to, he had to come up with a device to read screens.
Yes.
Because with echolocation, you can't read screens.
And the other thing, too, is they discovered the planet Tau Ceti E, and which they named after Rocky's mate, who had this really complicated name, which... basically was Adrian.
Well, it was like, what about Adrian? And Rocky was like, yeah, that's
yeah.
nice.
Which, again, gives a bit of humanity for us to relate to the alien. The alien had a mate, and that gave us a little bit more of a human connection, which would have been really tricky with a rock. So, and you know, there was they had this uncontrollable a fuel leak, which called this uncontrollable spin, and Rocky left his spaceship to go and save, left his spacesuit to save Grace, and then he was severely injured.
Because you know his blood was literally boiling.
Yes,
for the lack of 29 atmospheres of pressure.
That's right, and that's the interesting thing too, because I bought that these Rocky creatures that Rocky is a part of, they never sleep alone. One is always awake when the other, because once they go to sleep, you can't wake them.
The science behind that is, do you know how they move their muscles?
How?
They evaporate liquid in their muscles, and it's kind of like a pressure thing. So they change the pressure of the blood of their vessels to constrict and stuff arms. And when they're asleep, the pressure isn't there. The temperature isn't there, so they have to wake up so that they can raise the temperature to move them.
Oh, so while Rocky was in this sort of hibernation state to heal, Grace stayed awake for him, but he then discovered how to breed the astrophage consuming organism, which he names Tomamoeba. That got a little bit complicated for me there.
Tau means Tau Ceti, the Tau Ceti amoeba.
Yeah, you know, and they've
you can't tell me you'd come up with a better name in that
situation. No, it does the job. Rocky revives, and, you know, him and Grace, they part their ways. Grace is going back to Earth to take his discovery to Earth, and Rocky's off to his planet to take his discovery there. The movie could have finished there, but, of course, no good movie would finish there. No.
So basically the strain they had bred to survive the atmospheres of the planets in their solar system was also in a container that Rocky built.
That's
and it
right.
learned to and it evolved to get out of that container.
That's right.
Now the problem was all right for Grace because his ship wasn't made out of the same material as that container.
Yes.
So he could just contain it. But Rocky's ship is made out of the exact same stuff as that container. So the leak
yes.
would be the entire ship.
That's right. And so this is where Grace decides he's got a dilemma. Does he go back to Earth or does he go and save Rocky? And so he can send all of the information back to Earth, but he basically goes back and saves Rocky.
Did you notice that all the probes he sent back to Earth were the names of the Beatles?
No, I didn't.
They said John and Paul and Ringo and George.
I didn't notice that. So basically they receive the information back on Earth, and then we see on the Iridians create a biodome on their planet for Grace to live in. And I think the lovely thing is that Rocky tells him that the Iridian scientists have finished preparing Hail Mary to return to Earth. And Grace thinks about it as he goes back to teach science to the Iridian children. But you can see he's in no rush to go back to Earth. In fact, I think he's got that. He's been given the flexibility to go to Earth if he wants to or to stay. He's got nothing back on Earth that he wants to return to.
And the thing is, I'd feel quite burned considering that the people I'd be going back to are the ones that knocked me out, put me in a coma and sent me
yes.
across the galaxy without me when I said no type thing.
Yeah, and I think he actually quite enjoyed what he was doing.
Well, one thing they in the book he had been living on Erid for 16 years.
Yeah.
So he had been living there for a long time, whereas in the book, as in the movie, it just seemed it was a bit later. But I thought it was cool how he learned to speak their language.
Yes.
In the book, he learns to understand their language over the book, whereas in the movie, it's just the prologue. But yes. I think it's cool that it wasn't just having to be translated to English. He actually did learn what they were saying.
Yeah. It was a great movie. And then when we were talking about it, Rocky was an actual animated puppet.
He was fully real the whole time.
Yes, he was controlled by a team of 5 puppeteers, as well as the Jay Mortiers, who was the main controller of Rocky, and his voice. And I think that the day, because we talked about this, where movies up until recently have all been pretty much done by CGI these days, but they're moving back to a combination now of puppetry, which gives, I think, a far more realistic feel.
Well, I think a cool thing is, like, the scenes where Grace was out on the hull of the ship and stuff, and actually outside, they actually built that, and he actually was there, and they didn't use blue screen or green screen. They just had a black background.
Oh, yes.
So it actually felt more like he was there.
Yes. And so I think...
And the planets are beautiful.
Yeah. And so I think, though, this movie has really done a 360 in the fact that...
180.
No, we started off throwing everything out to use CGI.
Oh, yeah.
You remember, especially in a lot of those Marvel movies. But actually... this would have been one chance where they go, well, we could do CGI. We've got, but they chose to, and that's always more expensive doing puppets.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought it was really cool.
But I just love the fact that they made Rock a compelling character.
Yes.
And as I said earlier, it didn't feel like sci-fi.
No. Interesting. I don't know if you knew this, but the alternate voices for Rocky, you know how they tested out different voices?
One of them was Meryl Streep.
Yep.
Yep.
One was Eunice Holtet, the film stunt coordinator. One was Damien D. Froberville, co-president of Sony Pictures. One was Ray Porter, the audiobook narrator, and Meryl Streep.
The joke was that Ryan Reynolds, most of the scenes in the movie, they filmed them the way they were written.
Yes.
And then they let Ryan Reynolds do... what he want, made it up. Most of the scenes of the movie are what he made up. And one of the scenes was like, when they were doing that, they had...
Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, Reynolds.
Because I didn't see Ryan Reynolds in it.
No, Ryan Gosling. And one of the scenes was, that scene with the voices. And he was like, what about Meryl Streep? And people back there were like, I wonder if we could actually get Meryl Streep to do it.
Yeah.
And they called her up, and she was like, yeah. So they had made that joke before they actually got here.
Yeah. So I thoroughly enjoyed it as a movie. It was a great movie to go to. My only complaint would have been the time.
I didn't mind it.
I didn't mind it either because it was a good movie. But at the same time, it wouldn't have done it any harm to be 10, 15 minutes shorter.
Fun fact, the original first edit of the movie was 4 hours long.
Yeah, I can believe that. A bit like Iron Lung with Markiplier. Again, same thing with that one. I loved it. A little bit long. It could have had a little bit more trimming, but hey, if that's all that I can find wrong with it.
But, you know, I love this guy's movies and books. I love The Martian. Yeah. I love this one.
This was a good movie.
The writer, same guy that wrote The Martian, because he's just so good at converting all of the 16-hour audio book and actual book into a movie that, you know, is like, we'll cut this out and we'll replace it with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would go on, but we can't.
No, it was a great – oh, and the soundtrack, I just want to mention. The brilliant soundtrack too. They had some epic – moments with the music, which really led to it.
And something we picked up on in the movie, but we didn't know for sure, one of the songs was a Māori song.
Yes, that's right. I was just having a... It doesn't actually mention it in here. But no. The score consisting of 38 tracks. It did include Sign of the Times by Harry Styles, Two of Us by the Beatles. But it doesn't mention anything else under
there.
That.
There are quite a few Beatles references in the book.
Yes.
But yeah, if you enjoyed this episode, you can go get some behind-the-scenes content on facebook.com/generationfusion or Instagram, search up generationfusion. If you'd like to listen to more of us, you can go to npr.nz/show/fusion. And or you can go to Spotify and just search up Generation Fusion. Or better yet, to get all of this, everything I've just said, go on to Google and search up Generation Fusion and you'll get everything. And if you'd like to help us continue to make content and continue to make better content, you can go to givealittle.co.nz/org/NPR and donate as little or as much as you feel like. Thank you all for listening and we'll see you all next week.
Bye.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.